So before I actually begin what I want to say, I just want to draw your attention. First, let me say that this service, although I'm standing up here alone, there was a wonderful group of people who helped plan the service. And I'm grateful to Bryn Edelman and Miranda McGill for reading with me this morning. And I want to draw your attention to the artwork on the bulletin. This was done by Sasha McGill Dial, and we're all very pleased and proud of her work. And thanks again to Cheryl for filling in while Garrett is away. So following in the footsteps of Tammy and Liam, now Tammy explained the history of Mother's Day, and Liam explained the history of Father's Day, and I'm going to explain the history of Pride Day. Now, unlike those two earlier holidays, I'm willing to bet that not many of us are familiar with Pride Day. So for some of us, this will be a history lesson. So here it goes. Go back with me, if you can, to the late 1960s. Now, for some of you, this will require remembering what you learned in American history. But for others of us, this is our lived experience. The 60s were a time of emerging movements in women's rights and civil rights. And the events that took place at the Stonewall Inn on Christopher Street in Greenwich Village on the night of June 28, 1969, marked the beginning of the gay rights movement. Now, in 1969, the only terms that were used were gay and lesbian. And at that time, bars were one of the few places where we could meet openly. Now, none of these bars were owned by gay people. Most of them were owned by the mafia. As was the Stonewall Inn. They all had bouncers. They didn't like the way you looked, you didn't get in. But if you walk down Christopher Street today, you'll see a little marker in front of where the Stonewall Inn was. The Stonewall Inn has had a long history. The actual Stonewall Inn no longer exists, but there is a little marker there on Christopher Street that marks that historical site. Now, this wasn't unusual. The Stonewall didn't have a liquor license. And the Genovese crime family owned the Stonewall. I learned this from the History Channel, so I'm sure it's true. And what would happen is that once a week, a police officer would come by and collect envelopes of cash, and they called this payoff, are you ready, Gayola. And police raids were very common. And usually the bar management was tipped off so that they could hide the liquor so that when the raid was over, they could just open up the bar again. Now, over time, the movement became much more inclusive. So that's where we adopted the shorthand that you will see printed in your bulletin, the LGBTQIA. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex, asexual, I think I've got them all, plus, all right? And just as a lesbian, I need to say that you'll notice that the lesbian comes before the gay. That's because women were tired of taking second place. And that's true. So I just want to tell you a little bit, so there's a little sidebar. I want to tell you a little bit that I learned from the History Channel, and I think this is kind of interesting. There was a law, I'm not making this up, there was a law called the Three-Piece Law, and according to the History Channel, and I'm quoting now, in New York, a law commonly used among the LGBTQ, they were writing this contemporaneously, community dates to 1845 and was originally intended to punish rural farmers who had taken to dressing like Native Americans to fight off tax collectors. It was known as the Three Article Rule, or the Three-Piece Law. The rule stipulated that a person was required to wear at least three gender-appropriate articles of clothing to avoid getting arrested for cross-dressing. End of quote. Masculine women who dressed in men's clothes or effeminate men who dressed in women's clothes were arrested. Now, the Stonewall catered primarily to a male clientele, who's known as a gay bar, and there were a lot of drag queens there, men in drag. Now, these raids took a pattern. The police would come to the door, they'd yell, raid, everybody would be lined up, their identification would be checked, anyone dressed as a woman would go into the bathroom with a female police officer to make sure they were female. If they were not female and they were dressed in women's clothing, they were arrested. The night of June 28th, the patrons had had enough, and they refused to go along with this. They wouldn't show ID. They wouldn't go with the female officers. They just wouldn't cooperate. So the police called in the patrol wagons to try to arrest everybody, and people began to congregate in front of the bar. Some of these were people who had not been arrested but had been in the bar, and then obviously this attracted quite a crowd. The result was a riot. Now, some people say there were 400 people. Some people say there were 600. Some say 800. However many there were a lot of people and not that many police. And as they tried to restrain the crowd, some people got knocked over. A woman in handcuffs was beaten with a police club. And one of the drag queens hit a police officer with her purse. I would have loved to have seen that, actually. So why were gay men and lesbians and other sexual minorities forced into these situations? Because of the shame of being who they were. There was one way to be, and if you weren't that way, there was something wrong with you. And you were ashamed. This riot went on for 2 nights. It led to the modern gay rights movement. Some of us, myself included, mark time. There's before Stonewall, and there's after Stonewall. Before Stonewall, we were ashamed. After Stonewall, we were proud. Now, there's a lot of history between that night in 1969 and Pride Day in 2022. Sometimes it seems as though for every step we take forward, we take 2 steps backwards, which is why I think it's really important for the church to understand the history of how we got to where we are today. For every step made towards justice, there's a backlash. I believe this is what's leading to laws like the Parental Rights in Education Act in Florida. As NBC News reported, and I'm quoting, in its preamble, the bill's authors write that their aim is to prohibit classroom discussion about sexual orientation or gender identity. Some of us call this the Don't Say Gay Law. Unfortunately, there are currently many legislative attempts to block any discussion of LGBTQIA issues. What's behind this? Fear of the stranger. Fear of those who seem strange. Now, I'm going to change direction for just a moment and talk about left-handedness. Yes, people who are left-handed. My dad was born in 1922. I knew him as a righty. In my teens, we started playing golf. I noticed his golf clubs were left-handed golf clubs. It's like, Dad, what's up with this? I was really confused. And that's how I learned that when he was growing up, it was shameful to be left-handed. Some of you are shaking your head, yes, so you know this. There was a strong bias against being left-handed. And this bias is seen in lots of places. In the Bible, we hear sentences like the right hand of God, or those who fall from favor, let me try that again. Those who fall from favor with God are sent to the left. And, you know, I mean, you can find these references. And a lot of these references were used to say there's something wrong with people who are left-handed. In the 19th century, homosexuals were referred to as left-handed. Now, my father was converted from his dominant hand, the left one, to his non-dominant hand, the right one. When did this discrimination end? Are you ready? Not till the 1970s. According to an article by the Washington Post from August 13, 1979, and I'm quoting now, a University of Michigan study points out that left-handers may not be taking over the world, but 7% of the men and 6% of the women over 40 who were interviewed were lefties, but the percentages jumped to well above 10% in the 18 to 39 age group. Roughly 10% of that younger population was left-handed. One reason that the people over 40 might have had lower numbers, maybe shame at being left-handed, or perhaps they were converted to be right-handed. And this is how parents would convert their children to be right-handed. They would tie the left hand of the child behind the child's back so they couldn't use that hand. What was the effect of this conversion? The same Washington Post article quoted Dr. Bernard McKenna of the National Education Association, who said, there was recognition by medical authorities that left-handedness was normal and that tying the hand up in a child often caused stuttering, close quote. It also caused learning disorders and dyslexia. So what does our scripture today have to say about those who are strange, the strangers? It was a very long verse we read from Deuteronomy, but we read it because I love this part. Great God, mighty and awesome, who loves the strangers, you shall also love the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Not only were the Israelites strangers in the land of Egypt, they were strange. They didn't look like people in Egypt. They worshipped one god. People in Egypt worshipped multiple gods. They ate strange food. They probably looked different. How do we react to those who look different from us, or eat weird food, or have tattoos, or pink hair, or piercings? How do we treat them, these strange strangers? Yes, I know it's hard. Some sociologists say that we are hardwired to be tribal. We subconsciously divide the world up into us and them. And this made some sense when we needed to bond together as tribes to survive. But at some point, doesn't that have to be reconsidered? It's like the advice we get with kids, don't talk to strangers. That makes perfect sense when you're a child. That's not going to work great at a networking event, or in church, or any place where you want to meet someone new. Until you have met them, they are strangers. In our reading from John, Jesus tells us that, quote, as the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. So far, so good. But then he says, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Who is it that Jesus loved? Well, the disciples. Who else? The tax collector. The outcast. The prostitute, those with leprosy, the strangers and the strange. Jesus asks us, no, demands of us, that we love those who are not like us. My dad came out as a lefty. Some of us have come out as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer. We read in the call to worship this morning that we are a congregation that believes in the power of love. We believe that we are each valuable. We want to know each other so that we can know how to love each other. On this Pride Sunday, we remember that the Lord requires us to walk in all of God's ways, to love God and to serve God. And how do we do that? We love one another, even the stranger. May it be so.